to stand or to sit. There we go. Well, thank you, and I'm going to stand so I can see everybody. There's a large gap here. Hello, everybody, and I'd like to bring, first of all, greetings to everybody from Canada. How much time do I have?
How much time?
20, 25 minutes.
All right. I've got a lot to talk about, because I planned for an hour, but that's okay. I added some more content while I was sitting at the table, so I've got an hour and 10 minutes. But that'll be all right. I come at e-learning from a very different perspective than the e-learning that you probably read about in the books, and the e-learning that gets talked about at a conference like this. And in fact, the picture that I have of learning is very different than the picture that we have here. On the other hand, this is a perfectly appropriate place and forum to be talking about e-learning, because the comments of the first speaker were very relevant to me, because e-learning is not just about learning. It's certainly not just about return on investment and competencies and testing. Learning goes far beyond that, and it speaks to how we govern ourselves and how we become our own government. So to be in the birthplace of Parliament is a very relevant forum to be talking about the sorts of technologies and processes that will move us forward to empower society, to, as a recent writer said, to move us toward a new reformation. So I talk about e-learning not in terms of content and course packages and testing and student management. I talk about e-learning in terms of networks. And in particular today, I'll talk about learning networks. Now, I'm going to run very quickly through some theory of learning network, and then very quickly, because I have to do everything quickly here, through some practice of some of the practices in e-learning networks. But what I want to emphasize most of all is the way the new technology and the way people are using technology shifts our understanding of learning as something that is centralized, institution-based, in a large measure something that is controlled and monitored, something that is delivered to us as a service, into something that is not controlled, is not monitored, is something that people do for themselves, create their own capacities, and create their own learning. I'll talk about the methodologies and structures for that. And you see why this forum is the wrong sort of way to be doing that, because we're doing this the old way, right? I'm standing up here and I'm going to try to explain, and there's the big distance between me and you. Really, the way to do it is to have a dialogue to communicate back and forth with each other. But we'll do what we can with this forum. So, I have 140 slides now. So here's the picture of traditional learning, right? There's three major features of traditional learning that I've highlighted. I can highlight 15, 20. Institution-based, where our learning is thought of as occurring and based in schools and colleges, these days in corporations. It's product-based, and you go to an e-learning conference, and there's always the big trade show, and learning consists of things like course packs and books and other kinds of things that you buy and sell and you stack up in the library. It's content-based. Learning is the stuff that we're going to get from the library and put into people's heads somehow. And we design it, and we organize it, and we sequence it, and we give students a bunch of steps that they follow. That's the picture of learning that we have, isn't it? And I looked through the talks in this conference, and I think that many of the people here still think of learning as something that we're going to set out and prepare for students. We're going to design it for them and do all the work for them. And then they will come along and they will consume it. And if they're lucky, they'll do a little bit of interacting. They'll go to the special interaction room where they'll interact. And this is the picture of learning the old way. This is the picture of learning that was appropriate when the only technology that we had were beautiful rooms like this and blackboards and learned professors. We still have all of those things, and those things are still valuable, but we have so much more now. 119 to go. Learning networks is the opposite of that. Learning networks is not institution-based, it's resource-based. Learning networks is not about controlling access, controlling flow, it's about opening access, opening flow. Learning networks is not product-based. It's not about the selling and buying of commodities. It's not about packaging. It's about aggregating resources from the network. Resources freely shared and freely available. It's about identity, your own name, being used not to prevent people from being able to access materials, but being able to personalize and add to the value of the materials that are there. And it's not content-based. It's not the delivery of material. It's a picture of learning where learning is a conversation, where the learning happens not when information flows into you, but when there's a conversation that takes place back and forth. By that theory, you probably won't learn a whole lot today, but that's okay. Visit my website, and that's where the conversation will start. Learning networks is about networks, and so the basic structure of networks is founded on three basic elements. And very quickly, in a network we have entities. An entity may be anything. Probably a person, could be a resource, could be a computer program, any kind of thing you can think of. We don't restrict, we don't type, don't think of things as types, we just think of things as entities. An entity is anything that can send a message and receive a message. The other part of a network is the connections between the entities. The connections are usually physical, there might be a telephone wire, there might be an internet signal, something like that, but the idea is a connection is some way to send a message from one entity to another, from a person to a person, from a resource to a person. And then finally, we have the stuff that gets sent along the connections, the signal, the message, the information. The signal is the thing that is sent from one entity to another. On the internet, it's nothing more than an electrical pulse, a bunch of bits, ones and zeros. That's all it is. It's a signal. The signal has no meaning itself. It only has meaning when it is received by an entity and interpreted. This is a very different picture from the sort of picture that we normally have of information where the meaning of something is inherent in the content. You get a piece of learning content, and it has all the meaning it needs to have. But in a network, the content is just half the story. The content comes to you, but the content is useless unless you interpret it, unless you put it into a context. And that's how networks work. Networks have properties. These are well understood. I won't linger on them because I only have 20 minutes. properties related to the number of connections that entities may have with each other, properties related to how quickly connections may be formed, how quickly messages may be sent back and forth, and most importantly, properties related to how networks change. One of the things about networks is it's not static like a library. It's not static like a book. It changes, it grows, it shrinks, it's dynamic. It's like my presentation. It's never done. Even after I've done giving this presentation, I'll go back and work on it some more because I'll know how it didn't work. In this next part of the talk, I want to talk briefly about some network design principles. This morning there were six, and at about 7:30 there were seven. Now I'm up to eight, as I wrote one just a few minutes ago. The idea here is these principles, what I want to recommend as a use of these principles for this conference, because you are going to see very many different e-learning projects laid out, a whole buffet of e-learning projects. And as you look at all these different projects, measure them against these principles. And if they apply to these principles, then they are moving toward the direction of network learning. And if they go against these principles, then they're moving away. So what are the principles? Well, decentralize. If you think of the connections between people, think of all the connections right now that I'm making with you. I'm speaking, you're hearing, that's a connection from me to you, right? It's a physical connection, it's in sound waves in the air. Right now, it's a star shape. There's one center and then there's all of these connections, but you guys aren't talking among each other, well, except for the people in the back. That's a centralized network, isn't it? All the attention is focused on the center. I like being the center of attention, but that's not a good way to set up a network. It's a very unstable network. If I were to suddenly have a heart attack and die, that would be the end of the talk. That would not be good. So, a network is best organized as decentralized. Not one person in the center, but you talking to you, you talking to you, them continuing their conversation, you talking to you. The more decentralized, the more stable the network. Distribute. A network is typically distributed. You don't put everything all into one room. If you put everything all into one room, you have a silo, you have a building, you have a library. But a network, typically the entities will be located in discrete physical locations. So before we all got here, we were distributed. I was in Canada, you were in Italy, other people were in England or the United States or China. Now we're here, we're not a network anymore, we're a bunch of people in a room. Distributed networks are more stable because, not simply because they run less of a risk of disruption, but because they do not require such a concentration of effort in order to run. A centralized network requires a large infrastructure, like a palace. It requires massive bandwidth. If you go to Yahoo or Netscape, you look at the huge pipes coming in for bandwidth. It's enormously expensive. They require huge, massive storage. I used to work for Texas Instruments many years ago. Texas Instruments were on this, they were building enterprise systems, and I had disk drive units. I saw a disk, it was this big, disk drive. It held like 128K, but it was still this big. The idea was a huge, massive storage facilities. And that's not stable. It's putting, as they say, all of your eggs in one basket. But a network that is distributed is more stable and requires fewer resources. That's why Google doesn't put all of its search engine into one computer, but it has a network of computers all connected together. Disintermediation is the idea of removing the barriers removing the gatekeepers between one entity and another. What that is enabling communication to take place directly rather than indirectly. In the academic world, we have many mediators. We have editors or reviewers who say what works can be published and what works cannot be published. In the disintermediated network, all works get published. We have teachers who say what you should learn, what you should not learn, what words are good, what words are bad. We have systems that say you can talk to you, but you cannot talk to you. In a disintermediated network, people can communicate directly, and any filtering that takes place is not based on the content, but rather based on volumes, to reduce volume. If you think about it, the reason why this is, remember, when the message is in the network, it has no meaning. It only acquires a meaning when it is received. So if you are trying to control the message in the network, you are working on an incomplete meaning. And any filtering that is based on an incomplete meaning is going to be in some way incorrect. It'll be partial, it'll be overkill, it'll be something that is inappropriate. Disaggregation. One of the things that we see in education a great deal is a marketing methodology called bundling. And what bundling is when you want to get one thing, you buy something that's this big. So in a book, I might want to read one paper by Quine, but I buy the book and I get 24 papers. Or in your classroom, right? There's a physics text which has the perfect example you want to use in your class, but you have to buy the whole physics text in order to use that one example. The idea here is that these bundles are taken apart. They're disaggregated. They're broken down so that we're working with discrete elements of learning. And this is a concept that many of you have probably heard of, the concept of learning objects. And the idea is to work with the smallest possible unit of learning. Now what this does, it not simply improves the efficiency of communication, but it also increases the capacity of people to organize materials in their own way when it's received. So that we do not all have to read physics in the order that the author arranged it. We can mix and we can match. And the idea of learning objects was that we could locate or discover these learning objects, we could bring them in or aggregate them, and then we could organize them according to our own needs. By disintegration, I put a hyphen in there because I don't mean disintegration, I mean disintegration. If you think about it, on this computer, and I'd lift this up except it'll break, on this computer I have a program called Microsoft Windows. How many of you are familiar with Microsoft Windows? Yeah, almost all of you. One of the things about Microsoft Windows is all the software that works with it has to be written specifically for Microsoft Windows, right? It's what's known as an integrated environment. All the pieces plug in just so. They have to fit right tight close with Microsoft Windows software. Similarly, if you use a web browser and you want to look at something like, say, a Flash media file, you have to get a piece of software known as a plugin. And it plugs right into your browser, and you have to have that specific software in order to read the Flash file. This is program integration. In a network environment, this is not the case. It is not the case that you require specific software or specific applications in order to read content. Rather, the idea is that programs, computer applications, stand on their own. and then they communicate with each other rather than being a part of each other. And the way they communicate with each other is with a common language. Now sometimes, in fact, the more simple that common language, the better. I was in a store this morning. I had a common language with the shopkeeper that consisted of one word, a cafe. But it worked beautifully. I said cafe, I got coffee, communication established. A very good way to go. Now we move more to the social aspects of it. Democratization. And this is not simply a political principle, although it is that, but it's also a principle that is at the heart of the functioning of a network. And the idea here is that each entity in a network is autonomous. Each entity in a network decides for itself what it is going to do. And it does that in several ways. One way an entity is autonomous is that it decides for itself what the nature of its connections are. Now think about that in relation to learning. Imagine a learning environment where students can choose who their professors are from anywhere in the world. Imagine an environment where instead of you telling them what to read, they decide what to read. Imagine a world where they decide what other students they will communicate with and interact with. This is a very different picture, and unfortunately this short talk will not do justice to it. But the idea of democracy, the idea of democratization, is the idea of autonomy, of personal empowerment. How am I doing? Time.
2 minutes.
20 minutes. Okay. I know dynamize is not a word, but there wasn't a good word. A network is something that is fluid, it is something that is dynamic, it is something that changes constantly. Connections are grown, connections are shaped, connections change. And finally, the principle I wrote while I was up here, desegregation. The idea of learning as being separate from everything else is something that is beginning to change. The idea that we would go to a special place like a school in order to learn is like the idea that we would go to a special place like a library in order to read. Today we read anywhere. Today we communicate anywhere with mobile phones. And in a desegregated network, we will learn anywhere. Now you might ask, very briefly, how learning occurs in a network. And the way learning occurs in a network is through network semantics. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to talk about this in detail, but the idea of network semantics is that the meaning, the learning, is contained not in the entities and not in the messages, but in the organization of the entities and the organization of the connections. The learning, even a person's own learning, is not located in one place, but it's distributed across a network. And I'm going to close with this concept. I did want to talk about more, but time will preclude that. Think about the knowledge of how to build a jet aircraft. Does anyone know how to build a jet aircraft? And we're tempted to say, well, someone must know how to build a jet aircraft because we have jet aircraft and they actually fly and they actually land and they don't crash often. But if you went out and you looked for somebody who knows all about how to build a jet aircraft, there is no such person. Nobody knows how to build a jet aircraft. Different people know different parts of it. And if you looked at one of the workers, somebody who, say, builds the control panel in a jet aircraft, and you ask that person, well, how do you know what to do to build a control panel? And that person will say, well, I'm just going to do this and do that. But how can, you don't know anything about pails. And the person will have to say, well, I talked to this other person. The knowledge of how to build a jet aircraft is distributed. But that one person's knowledge is also distributed. Which means that for this person, learning isn't just about finding out about control panels, because they'll only understand a small part of it. Learning for this person must mean setting up a network of connections so that they can talk to and communicate with all the other people who are involved in building jet aircraft. Otherwise, they don't know at all. Their own personal knowledge is not worth anything unless it's situated in this context, in this network. And that's the principle behind network learning. And as we move forward into a new connected environment where the problems of society are more and more complex, where it's not just about how to build a house, but it's about how to build a jet aircraft or how to build a society, we cannot have a theory of knowledge that assumes all the knowledge can be in one person or in one place. And so learning in this new environment will be learning not how to get a bunch of facts in our head, but it will be learning how to communicate, how to interact, how to form connections, how to manage connections, and how to understand how we place ourselves within this network as a whole. And I thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate this. These slides will be on my website. You can see the other half of it. And I'll also put some links and things like that. I really appreciate the invitation to come and talk here. It's been an honor and a privilege. Grazie.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stevenson. Any questions? Yes.
One essential element in your presentation is the conversation,
right,
among entities. Have you a theory of conversation?
By a theory of conversation? The theory of conversation that I have isn't a theory of conversation per se, but if asked to present a theory of conversation, I would present the eight elements that I just gave you, where the theory of the network is the theory of a conversation. So the autonomy, the distribution, that would be the approach that I take as a theory of conversation. I don't know if that answers your question, and I wasn't able really to talk about the semantics of the network structure that I described, but that would be it. Does that help? I know it's not a very good answer. At least I can admit that.
Other questions?